Good morning. Thank you for coming to the farthest reaches of the Hyatt to be here this morning. Glad you all found the place. And I also want to thank our organizers for putting this together. I put a little caveat that I don't have a lot of temporal variability, but there will be some implication on that. This is more about dealing with spatial variability. So just by way of introduction, of course, water fluxes at the land surface are very important for a variety of processes that are being considered in the topic of change, and we're working in agricultural or agroecosystems. The particular systems are rain-fed, and in these systems, the storage, of course, is critical for sustaining the crop within and between seasons, so we want to know how much water gets into the ground and that sort of thing. And then finally, just note here that the assessments of soil change require characterization across scales in space and time. And thank you, Ollie, for that very nice talk about the dynamics between space and time. This is a field site on the lower left. You can see in Colorado, we're in northeastern Colorado on the plains. And I won't be talking about our soil moisture data, but we have a field site where we're collecting hourly data and on two transects. These are crop strips. There's a watershed delineated here within a field. You probably can't see that. Says 200 meters there. So this is a half-section field, and you can see some topography in there. So we're looking at a system that has some relief. These are silty clays, silty clay loam, sandy clay loam materials, and they're the loess material that are calcium carbonate rich. This shows these are the water content sensors here in the dots, and then another plot showing where we've collected infiltration measurements. So we previously published some of this work, which I won't get into all the fractal analyses, but we were looking for spatial patterns in those measurements directly. And so the way we designed it was within each site, we're calling each site has a letter, we divided it into 10 by 10 meter cells and then randomly selected three of those and then randomly selected five locations within those to get a little bit of nested behavior, and still very sparse though. So, you know, when you're dealing with infiltration measurements or hydraulic conductivity, you're always data limited, so that was one of the issues we were trying to deal with there. This is showing on the x-axis is the northing, so if you're looking north to south, which is the kind of the dominant direction of those transects in that field, you can see quite a bit of variation. This is the steady infiltration rate from those rings, not corrected for three-dimensionality, at different sites, so you can see similarities and differences between them, just to give you a feeling for the variance we encountered. This slide is showing some summary statistics just to point out that for each site we have a very accurate DEM or digital elevation model at 5 meter scale, so we could compute elevation, slope, and topographic wetness index and look at some of the means and variances in there. And at the bottom you may not be able to see well, but the linear regression of the steady infiltration on these different terrain attributes was basically very low. These are R values, so if you look at the R squared, it's essentially not explained at all by elevation. But when we fit a cubic to it, which is very site specific, we start to see that there are spatial patterns, which we know we see, but they're difficult to explain. So that's just by way of introducing the data as well as some of the variability that we're encountering. So the question is, what kind of surrogate data can we use to get more spatial detail and start looking at effective properties? And so we've used core data or PET on scale data that if we have saturated water content and then something around field capacity, let's say, or third bar, Laja Huja and others have developed some transfer functions, essentially, some relationships between the saturated hydraulic conductivity and the, it's buzzing at me.
Sorry.
Okay. And if this is the effective porosity or the saturated minus the third bar, which we estimate with a 2 days after infiltration. So it's interesting to see all of your variance changing right around that threshold of 2 days. I'm not sure what that means for us, but I'll think about that. We've used this relationship, many people have used this relationship because it is useful. Recently, Ahuja et al. Published a paper on scaling of infiltration using this as the underlying conductivity for the component soils. Fang et al., I think this is still in press, published a paper, again, using the root zone water quality model to look at those soil water dynamics within some of those specific sites. And this did not explain that very well in that case for those specific sites, but it was a useful initial condition for parameter estimation. So backing off or looking at a universal relationship, Rawls et al. Have some data way back in 1982, which have been very useful for looking across texture classes. And so each of these is the mean log hydraulic saturated hydraulic conductivity of a texture class. A few of them were pointed out that were used in this paper. And you see a very nice relationship on a log-log scale where that's explaining 96% of the variability. So before I get into our data and how well that works, I just wanted to explain a little bit more about after the single ring infiltration measurements, approximately 8 hours later, and it was pretty close to that, we sampled right at the center of each ring, so it's right at the middle of where things were happening. They were 2-inch by 10-centimeter cores, two depth intervals. One of the sites actually was 0 to 15 and 15 to 30, so I put that node in there. The technique is very simple. You weigh, and then dry, and then weigh again, and from that you compute the porosity, the water content at field conditions, which we assume is a third bar, and from that we get that effective porosity in the equation I showed. Then we compute the saturated hydraulic conductivity for each core, and in this, what I'm showing you today, we'll just assume that the effective hydraulic vertical hydraulic conductivity is characterized by the harmonic mean of those two layers. And then finally, we estimate a site average effective KSAT, which is really our goal. So we're trying to say for purposes of simulating these landscapes, and we're doing some work trying to put together a spatially variable model, what parameters can we use at the scale of those, say, 30 by 30 meter sites? So now this is looking at the relationship that I showed you previously was a universal one from Rawls data. And this is looking at what happens with our data, not with effective porosity, but comparing these saturated hydraulic conductivities estimated from the post-infiltration data with field saturated hydraulic conductivity directly from the infiltration rates corrected for the geometry there. And there are two relationships. This was an early one that Ahuja developed in 89, and this was an improved one for that particular case that they were looking at. But you see that both drastically underestimate what's happening at the hydraulic conductivities. And can I go back, Scott? Is that hard to do? I forgot to point out something in that previous slide. One more back? Yeah. Thank you. So we're really working in this zone in here of the universal relationship, and what you see is even with the mean of the texture class, there's some interesting things going on. So we might not be surprised that the relationship doesn't hold very well within a specific soil type. Okay, this one's even more noisy, but I think this is... I'm trying to keep it pretty simple here. There's no, not a lot of scaling work going on. So this is just looking at if we then correct those in order to get the mean hydraulic conductivity correct based on the infiltration measurements. And then, so that's the first data. So this is what it calls shifted. So the blue ones have just shifted everything up to match the field data. The red ones here are scaling the distribution so that they match both the mean and the variance. So now you're not necessarily matching at every point, but in a distributional sense, we're matching. And these lines are just the regression, letting it go freely, and this one is forcing them to go through zero, showing that even though we have a wide spread, we're getting closer to that one-to-one line. Now if we order them, It's always nice to order things because then they look really good. This is the one, actually this is a regression line, but it's very close to a one-to-one line. And you see that in the middle of the range, the distribution holds up very well, and then as you might expect, the tails go out. I did force values not to go below the minimum of the measured value. So some of these would have been negative. And then getting to, so this is all spatial, assuming that things are not changing in time. We know that we took measurements in two different periods, and that the soil temperature, we measured the soil water during infiltration, the temperature varied. So we corrected for that. And so this is showing the same values on the x-axis, but now standardized to 20 degrees C on the y-axis. So you get a little feeling for, in time, just due to temperature, and the range of temperature is 12 to 29 degrees C, it turns out that our median temperature was right at 20, or very close to that. We get a nice relationship around the one-to-one line, but there is quite a bit of variation just due to that temperature and viscosity effect. So now, be nice here, I think. Thank you. So Mohanty and Zhu have a nice paper in Journal of Hydrometeorology where they look at effective parameters for KSAT if you have different coefficients of variation for KSAT, and this alpha is Gardner's alpha, which is in the exponent for unsaturated hydraulic conductivity. If we assume that those values are 0.5, which is, we know that for our site, we don't know this one, but we'll guess that. They showed that you get an effective KSAT that is not too much reduced from the arithmetic average. So there's not a lot of nonlinearity that we have to deal with in this case with horizontal heterogeneity. And yet when we use that relationship, this is the effective KSAT again from the steady infiltration, and this is what we're doing by other methods, we see quite a bit of spread, but by our correction, we force things to at least fall around the one-to-one line so that if you're doing some modeling work, you have less bias there. So this is just to show you kind of where we are in terms of the values that you get, where each of these is the effective hydraulic conductivity at a site, at one of those 10 sites. So to summarize, the site-specific estimation of KSAT from effective porosity showed large errors using that universal relationship. So we have also found that with some other modeling work that KSAT ends up being a calibration parameter, but we're trying to really truth it into measurements and also think about how those change in time. The estimated hydraulic conductivity can be transformed, and that's what we did. Maybe that's cheating, but if you don't do that, things go very badly. And even so, the estimates of the effective KSAT within those 30 by 30 meter sites vary greatly among the sites and also deviated from the values inferred from the measured infiltration rates. And then just finally, to get back to our theme here, the temporal variability due to soil management, environmental factors is generally not well known, difficult to quantify, but at a minimum, we should at least be looking at temperature, measuring that in the soil so that we can do some temperature correction and account for that. And then finally, that there are models that can, you can look at the dynamics of soil properties with time, but I'd say ground truthing those remains a challenge. Thank you, Seth.
All right, thanks, Tim.